From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today is Wednesday, July 28th.
There are a system of immigration laws that exist on the books that ostensibly cannot just be ignored. One of those is the right to claim asylum, and you have the right to do that at or just over the U.S.-Mexico border.
That was Molly O'Toole, immigration and security reporter at the LA Times, talking about one of the biggest issues of contention with President Biden's current immigration policies. We'll dig into that a little bit later, but first, your morning headlines. As the Delta variant continues to spread rapidly, the CDC announced on Tuesday a significant change from earlier guidance. The new recommendation is that everyone in K-12 schools wear a mask indoors. That includes teachers, staff, students, and visitors, regardless of vaccination status. The CDC also went on to recommend that people who are fully vaccinated and live in a high transmission area, which is roughly 46% of U.S. counties, should wear masks indoors. The CDC also stood by its recommendation for children to return to school full-time in the fall. President Joe Biden says he's still considering whether or not to require all federal employees to be vaccinated. More than 6 months after the January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol, four police officers testified on what happened to them. The January 6th Commission was established by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and includes two Republicans. The officers went into great detail explaining what they went through that day, including one officer who said that the attackers tried to gouge his eyes out and called him a traitor. Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn explained how racial slurs were hurled at him. Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell spoke about his experiences.
But nothing in my experience in the Army or as a law enforcement officer prepared me for what we confronted on January 6th. The rioters called me a traitor, a disgrace, and shouted that I, an Army veteran and a police officer, should be executed.
Four congressional Republicans, including Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor, held a press conference in front of the Department of Justice at the exact same time as the hearing, spreading disinformation by claiming Nancy Pelosi was the reason behind the attack. They also asked for a status report on the individuals arrested in connection to January 6, calling them political prisoners. The Biden administration announced their new blueprint to overhaul the immigration system in what they're calling the, quote, most fair, orderly, and humane way. The plan is broken down in four parts. One is to ensure a secure, humane, and well-managed border. The second, implementing orderly and fair processing of asylum applications. Third, strengthening collaborative migration management with regional partners in Central and South America. And the fourth one, investing in Central America to address the root causes of migration. There's no current timetable to implement these new changes. We're digging into the issue of immigration and what's happening at the border in our daily deep dive. A new administration and the pandemic have both played major roles in immigration at the Mexico border. U.S. border agents stopped nearly 200,000 immigrants trying to cross the southern border in June, marking a 21-year high in monthly border crossings. Why are we seeing such a surge, and is the Biden-Harris administration likely to be successful in addressing the issues? Molly O'Toole, immigration and security reporter at the Los Angeles Times, joins us to break it all down. Molly, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you a little bit about the role the pandemic has played. How do you think that's going to affect the strategy of how this Biden administration moves forward?
Well, it's been really interesting to see how the Biden administration has sort of handled this transition. Obviously, they inherited a global pandemic that was ongoing when they entered office. But rarely have you seen such an opposite approach in terms of even just coming down to the language that is used to talk about immigration and the policies that were promised from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. The Biden administration has sort of been using the pandemic as pretext for what are actual political goals rather than public health goals.
When you say that they're using COVID for political goals, what do you mean?
Well, actually, there was the increase in numbers at the border, which we tend to measure with a term that's known as apprehensions. 2019 was one of the highest levels that we've seen in recent decades under the Trump administration. And then there was a lull, a pretty dramatic lull that occurred really when the pandemic first emerged. So sort of in the spring of 2020. And that's when a lot of these border measures were put into place. Essentially, the border being closed to all non-essential travel And then there was the implementation of Title 42. Title 42 was implemented in March of 2020 by the Trump administration. It refers to a 1944 public health law, and it authorizes border officials to quickly remove or summarily expel anyone arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border, and it primarily has affected asylum seekers. Under U.S. law, migrants have the right to seek asylum, whether at an official port of entry or if they cross between a U.S. port of entry. So long as they seek that protection, they request that protection from the United States, they're entitled to go through that process. And that's actually a form of legal immigration to the United States, not illegal immigration to the United States. And so when I say that in some ways the Biden administration is using the pandemic as pretext, Title 42 is supposed to be for public health purposes. So when the pandemic emerged, the CDC, who are sort of supposed to be dictating what the COVID response should look like from a public health perspective, they said that there really was no public health purpose for Title 42 because it didn't actually achieve any protections in terms of quote unquote, you know, preventing COVID from entering the United States, especially because so many other categories of people could cross back and forth. And at the time, the US was the epicenter for the world. So the CDC has said, and public health experts have said, that there really is no public health purpose for Title 42. They're making a different argument about keeping numbers down at the border, but that's a political goal, not necessarily a public health goal. So that's what I mean when I say that in some ways they are using the pandemic as pretext to try and keep numbers down at the border for political reasons.
So why do you think the Biden administration is still keeping Title 42 in place?
I think the Biden administration is keeping Title 42 in place for a few reasons. I think one is they are eager to try, to the extent that they can, to keep numbers down at the border. In many ways, Title 42 is very similar to Remain in Mexico, which was the policy that essentially forced asylum seekers to wait just south of the border. Title 42 essentially does the same thing, except that people are removed without any chance to even register asylum claims. They're removed in an average of 45 to 90 minutes. They're removed very, very quickly. So I do think the Biden administration is keeping Title 42 in place in part because they believe it will help keep numbers down at the border. And they think that that is a political liability for them. They essentially didn't realize the extent to which the U.S. immigration system had been dismantled under the Trump administration. And so I believe that it's taken them more time, more work than they had planned on to essentially try and fix that or set up an alternative. And then I think the reality is that this has been a conundrum that has defied administration after administration for decades. How do you get the political will to do immigration reform at the same time as you try and come up with a sort of humane system that allows the people who really do need protection, at the same time as you're meeting economic needs of the United States? This sort of overall picture of how you balance enforcement with immigration reform. There are a system of immigration laws that exist on the books that ostensibly cannot just be ignored. One of those is the right to claim asylum. And you have the right to do that at or just over the U.S.-Mexico border. And not just by my analysis, but even by the analysis of the United Nations. And we're signatory to the Refugee Convention, which is the foundation of U.S. refugee law. They have said that this policy is blatantly illegal, that it violates that fundamental right that U.S. law gives migrants to claim asylum. They've talked about a replacement, essentially, a big fix for asylum and for the U.S. immigration system. That remains to be seen. We haven't seen any signs of that or what that's going to look like. But they can sort of only blame the prior administration so much. These are long existing challenges that even Biden grappled with as a vice president under the Obama administration.
Molly, though, you look at the numbers here, 21-year high in monthly border crossing. I mean, federal officials logging more than 1.1 million apprehensions. I mean, you look at that milestone. The last time that was reached was 2006, is my understanding. Why are we seeing this surge in illegal border crossings now?
One thing that's really important to note, apprehensions used to, more typically, measured 1-to-1. Apprehension would equal one migrant. So when we talk about apprehensions, they are a rough measure of what's going on at the border, but they're not a perfect measure. And that's become even more true in the last few months under the Biden administration. So why is that? because Title 42, ironically, is actually incentivizing repeat crossings at the border. For example, even if that migrant says, I want to seek asylum, they're often not given the opportunity to do so. That's part of what Title 42 authorizes Border Patrol agents to do. So very basic biometric information. The goal is for them to remove that person as quickly as possible, because the argument ostensibly is to try and prevent the spread of COVID-19 in detention facilities. So they try and process them as quickly as possible, and then essentially they dump them right back over the border at the absolute closest place that they possibly can. But what that means is that there actually is no legal consequence at the moment. No legal consequence and very little logistical consequence, because they're essentially right back where they started 45 minutes to 90 minutes ago. So people are trying again and again and again. But the reason I want to point this out is because you might see the numbers from last month and say, oh my gosh, what dramatic numbers. Those numbers do not mean one to one. I think a lot of what is happening is people are comparing the numbers we're seeing now to 2020, which you really cannot compare, because there was a global pandemic that emerged. And so it looks like this huge increase from last year, which is true. But when you actually compare the numbers from 2021 to 2019, which is a much better comparison for the purposes of analysis, you're actually not seeing an increase. Certainly, there absolutely is the Trump effect, which is essentially that Trump is no longer in office. People know this, and they do believe that they will have a better chance if they come now. And then the other reality is that the pandemic has devastated the global economy. In particular, the pandemic has devastated Latin America in a way that's even disproportionate to other parts of the world. But when you look at the Northern Triangle countries, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, their economies were devastated by COVID. The pre-existing reasons that we're all very aware of, this sort of horrible cocktail of poverty, climate change, corruption is a huge one, you know, criminality, impunity for that criminality, gangs, et cetera. So on top of that, you've got the global pandemic. And then on top of that, particularly in Honduras, you had two hurricanes that hit within 40 miles of each other. Can you imagine that happening in the United States?
We don't think about that often, and the impact that it has, just regular climate change issues as well. I want to ask you, you know, Biden has really put the border issue on Vice President Kamala Harris's plate. What are the expectations here? What is she empowered to do?
It is a tough assignment. And what's fascinating about it to me is it was Biden's assignment when he was vice president, and it really didn't start to be addressed as a priority issue until 2014. So it's been really interesting, because the strategies that the Biden administration has adopted, Biden as president now, are very similar to what we saw then. I mean, the big push from the Obama administration was address the root causes. What we hear Vice President Kamala Harris talk about over and over again, we need to address the root causes. We really need to tackle corruption. We really need to empower grassroots community organizations. They're the ones who need our support to try and address these push factors and try and essentially keep people at home. It was a very difficult assignment for Biden as vice president. It's been a very difficult assignment for Vice President Kamala Harris. So we've just seen a lot of those policies sort of repeated. I think it's a very open question as to whether they'll work now when they are sort of the same policies.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with Molly O'Toole on the Recount Daily Pod. Hey, welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. We're here with Molly O'Toole, immigration and security reporter for the Los Angeles Times. So we've got midterms next year. Is this whole policy going to backfire if Democrats don't pass anything, that you've got this surge of immigrants at the southern border?
You know, I'm something of a cynic, having covered immigration and security in some form for more than a decade. I am doubtful that they will get immigration reform done. When we talk about sort of a comprehensive path to citizenship for 15 million people, kitchen sink comprehensive immigration reform bill, not going to happen. The debate, it's the same thing we hear over and over again. Well, the border's not secure. But what is a secure border? What metric would need to be hit for certain people in Congress to be satisfied to the extent they would then be willing to support comprehensive immigration reform? Everyone sort of says, well, we all support comprehensive immigration reform. We all recognize the system is broken and we need a solution. But inevitably, what it comes down to almost every time is we need border security first. But what does that mean? So comprehensive immigration reform I do not think is going to happen. You know, issues you can split off, such as DACA, other things, perhaps. But I think we hear a lot from Republicans about how immigration is a vulnerability for Democrats in the midterms. And I think if you look at Republican polling, that's certainly true. But if you look at Democratic polling or other polling, there is a lot of public support for certain aspects of comprehensive immigration reform. So I think that the Democrats could ostensibly make an argument that actually, no, comprehensive immigration reform or certain elements of immigration reform is popular.
Rural America has had a growth problem. The nation's birth rate is slowing. There are many areas in rural America that really need help from workers. There aren't enough people to fill these jobs. Do you think migrants can help solve that? And what kind of legislation could make that happen? Do you see that happening?
Certainly the pandemic, it's by no means over, but we have started to see this economic recovery. And in all these different industries, they cannot find workers. And this is sort of what many sectors, such as the agricultural sector, the industrial sector, have been saying for years, that they don't have enough workers who are willing to do these jobs. And that these are sort of the business constituencies that actually do support widening avenues for legal immigration for workers. But the narrow system that exists has not functioned in a way that really works for the American economy and that really works for these workers. We need to talk about both sides.
What do you see as someone who's covered immigration for so long? What's the future of immigration like over the next 5 years? Do you have any hope that something will pass in Congress?
I hate to end on such a pessimistic note, but no, I really don't. We're in the midst of a global refugee crisis that we pretend doesn't exist because we're over here, but it's obviously in America's backyard, for lack of a better phrase. People are going to keep coming. You'll be in denial if you suggest that they aren't. So the question is, how is the United States going to deal with that reality, that increasing reality? I don't think we've shown any more willingness to answer that question now than we have in the past several decades.
Flaked administration from administration. I want to thank you, Molly O'Toole, immigration and security reporter at the Los Angeles Times. Molly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And now to the look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today. President Joe Biden heads to Pennsylvania today as he tries to push his $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure plan through the Senate. The White House says he'll talk about the importance of manufacturing and buying products made in the U.S. This will be Biden's second trip to Pennsylvania this month after last week's visit to talk about voting rights. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman will head to Switzerland today to lead the U.S. delegation's participation in a U.S.-Russia bilateral meeting. The meeting is a follow-up to President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin's agreement to have robust talks that will seek to lay the groundwork for future arms control and also risk reduction measures between the two countries. Rapper Cardi B heads to court today. The Grammy Award-winning artist is charged with two misdemeanor counts of reckless endangerment and one misdemeanor count of assault in connection with an attack on two bartenders at Angel's Strip Club in New York City. Cardi allegedly threw a bottle at two of the victims and ordered her bodyguards to attack them. She had turned down a plea deal, which would have seen her plead guilty to third-degree assault in exchange for a conditional discharge. Have a great day. I'll see you back on Thursday morning. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Molly O'Toole for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.